Okay, everyone, welcome to another episode of Free For All. This is your host, Big John, and this is the program where we discuss libertarian issues of the day and or rather issues of interest to libertarians and libertarian-minded people. You're listening to us here on Grumblings Media, grumblingsmedia.com. And of course, you can find us on all the podcasting platforms, Pandora, Apple Podcast, Google, Spotify, anywhere podcasts are found, and of course YouTube and Rumble. So having gotten that bit of technical business done, let's move on to the show today. Today's topic is going to be the election of Javier Milei in Argentina, the world's first libertarian president, which is exciting news for folks of our stripe. And I have a very important guest today that will help us make some sense of it all. He is Juan Pablo Villasmil. And again, I practiced with Juan prior to starting the cameras because I didn't want to disrespect his last name by butchering it. So Villasmil, I believe I got it right or close enough, yeah. Hopefully Juan. Yes, okay, great. And from now on, though, I'm just going to say Juan. So Big John and Juan, two Johns on the same show. I already sense a vibe here, Juan. But folks, don't let my nonsense distract you. Juan is someone whose work has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, the American Spectator. He's been a guest on Fox News to discuss some of these issues. So he's someone who's really on the ball, knows his stuff, and I'm very happy to have him on the show. Juan, thank you so much for joining us today.
John, the American version of Juan, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. And I hope we can dive into what made Milei the behemoth that he has become in libertarianism in the world. I actually, before we start, it's funny because when I first started to get into politics, you know how, you know, young people on the right usually watch Ben Shapiro or one of those for the first time when they're like 14 or maybe 13, 12.
Right.
For me, growing up speaking Spanish and English, when I was young, Milei was starting to become a superstar. It's been really funny to see Milei go from this economist, you know, talking and sometimes insulting leftists to an actual president.
So you've taken the ride along with him, so to speak.
Yeah. I've known, well, not known the guy because I don't talk to him, but I've known who he is for much longer than the usual folks.
Okay, that's good because then you could give us some of your unique insight. So let's start off a little bit, if we can. Let's talk about the context that kind of brought Milei into power, into prominence, because I think there are some parallels that possibly that we could talk about later. There are some parallels to the rise of Trump in the U.S. that perhaps, and I'm kind of teasing the next part of the segment, we could draw to Milei. But let's set up the situation in Argentina. Argentina, in terms of the country itself, has a GDP of roughly $650 billion. That ranks him number 23 among the world economies. They have an unemployment rate of 6.2%. So those numbers aren't necessarily bad. They're solid economic numbers. But here's where you get into trouble. The poverty rate is 40%. Of that 40%, 9% of the population is in what's considered extreme poverty. And the most damning thing of all is their inflation rate was just measured at 143%. 143%. For folks who may not be as economically quick, that means that in less than a year, the price of everything has doubled. And that's continuing, right? So, or your currency value has been cut in half in less than a year's time, in roughly 8 months, if I'm doing the math correctly in my head. So you can picture that those type of economic conditions, Juan, really, for Americans who didn't live through any sort of extreme inflation, I mean, we think 3%, 5% inflation is horrible, right? 143%. That's crushing for the everyday people in Argentina. There's absolutely no way to escape that sort of crushing inflation, is there?
Yeah, it's amazing. Not as amazing as Venezuela, where I grew up for a portion of my life. So when we talk about inflation, sometimes I'm like, they don't even know what inflation is. But Argentina, surprisingly, it's reaching the third place in the entire world in terms of inflation. The IMF projected that by the end of this year, it's almost over.
Yeah.
Argentina was going to be behind Venezuela and Zimbabwe, it's crazy. Of course, it was crazy with Venezuela because the country with the biggest oil reserves and such a powerful country. But with Argentina more recently, when people think of Argentina, they think of, you know, one of the most civilized countries in Latin America.
It's
the second most powerful economy in South America. It's up there with Brazil. It's bigger. They have a great soccer team. They have the Pope. They have Leo Messi. So how is it exactly that Argentina's economics are so bad? You know, Venezuela is still, you know, it's been there for a while. Argentina, though, although it's been declining for a while under socialist rule, only recently captured the attention of the world, which is something that, you know, we can't blame American readers because they don't want to know everything about Argentina. They're not obsessed.
Right.
But it was Milei who actually brought forward this critique and made people talk about Argentina more openly. Because South Americans, for instance, knew how bad things were, you know, developing in Argentina.
Right.
But the rest of the world wasn't that aware. They saw Argentina as one of the countries that are not doing that bad.
Right.
In South America.
Yeah, and I think it's important that, again, for some of our younger viewers, perhaps, they don't have the historical perspective of what these conditions lead to. So it isn't exaggerating to say that, A, these conditions are caused by, look, inflation, the major and perhaps only true cause of inflation, hyperinflation, is government spending. It's government debt, right? It's not that you have greedy businesses. It's not that you have billionaires who are hoarding money. That's not the cause of inflation. The cause of inflation is that the printing presses, the government just constantly prints out fiat money and spend. So because the underlying, like the GDP, the per capita income, all these metrics of production are fairly solid, as you said, for Argentina. It's not like they're like Zimbabwe. You could say to yourself, well, they don't have a strong economy, you know, so they're dependent on a lot of different factors and there's a lot of corruption and whatnot. But with Argentina, you're talking about a big economy. You're talking about a solid economy that is literally being undone deliberately by government policy. It's government policy, contrary to what the citizens might be told. It's government, much like here in the U.S., it's government policy that's driving this misery. And when people say, well, how did Hitler come to power? It's not an exaggeration that it was the hyperinflation in Germany that brought Hitler to power. People were just, you know, were constantly poor. They couldn't get out from under. Those conditions are ripe for strongmen, typically speaking. They're ripe for strongmen. So, but what's interesting here is, out of this crushing hyperinflation and doom and gloom of the Argentinian economy, we have a beacon of light that starts to emerge, and that would be Javier Milei. Tell us a little bit about Javier Milei's background. So just for my notes, he's basically an economics professor, correct?
Yeah. So Javier Milei has the background of an economist. There's other fun facts, like he was really into rock. I think he was a member of a rock band. He was a goalkeeper. He loved soccer. of course, he's Argentinian.
Right.
but in the last decade, maybe the last two decades, he started to become a prominent, well, at the beginning, not prominent, but then really prominent, spokesperson for libertarianism in Argentina and in South America. Actually, I touched on this in another article I wrote for Foreign Policy Magazine, but Javier Milei has really, and the libertarian movement writ large in Latin America, has grown to be really successful. And Milei has kind of become the face of that success. Well, now it's more literal. He's a president. But beforehand, there were other little Javier Mileis, let's call them. There were Javier Mileis in Guatemala, like Gloria Alvarez, who's a bit more starkly libertarian in the way she presents herself. Milei, you know, still tries to talk sometimes like a social conservative on some issues. Gloria doesn't. There were Javier Mileis in Chile. There were Javier Mileis in Uruguay. Actually, right after Javier Milei announced he was running for president, sometime afterwards, Uruguay announced the creation of a libertarian party in Uruguay. So, yeah, it's been amazing. But in short, Javier Milei started as an economist.
Right.
He has a really eccentric, fun personality. So the first time he got on TV, I'm sure he got another call. And they said, hey, man, we disagree with you, but you're really fun and people love to watch you.
Right.
So he started to go on these TV channels, and most of the time he was the minority, ideological minority. He would just, you know, get into screaming matches with socialists, and he would just tell them, like, you guys are crazy, you're destroying this country. And slowly but surely, some people start to take him seriously.
You know, and it's interesting to me because I'm not a native Spanish speaker. And as a matter of fact, I don't know the language, right? But when I watched the videos of Milei, like you said, on those TV shows, in some of those public appearances, I was fascinated because I would read the translations of his talks. And look, as a libertarian, I agree with just about everything he said, right? So, you know, and as an academic, he has that background, you know. But it's interesting to compare Milei's rise to the rise initially of some libertarians here in the U.S. For example, I've always said this, the Libertarian Party until very recently, and even to some extent, even to today, suffers from the fact that people view us as clowns, politically speaking, right? If I said to the average voter, if they knew libertarianism at all, they might associate Vermin Supreme with it. They might associate in America John McAfee with libertarianism, like all the ones that are a bit kooky, eccentric, and not in a positive way, but in a negative way. Whereas in Argentina, it seems to me that Milei's eccentricities actually have made him more popular because he's managed to, and I don't know if that's a cultural difference, like the flag, like I saw him with a piñata that symbolized the Argentinian central bank, and he just destroyed it to pieces, right? Like, now that's flamboyant. It's very personality driven, but it has a very good underlying message, right? That the central bank is really the source of our problems here. After he got elected, I saw this great clip of him where he's got all the cabinet names on a board with stickers. And what's the word in Spanish for gone? What's the one word? I don't remember.
Afuera.
Afuera. Yeah. So he would say like, the Department of Education, afuera, you know, Department of Departamento Cultura, you know, afuera, you know, and he was ripping them down. And I was saying to myself intellectually, wow, that's awesome. You know, he's proposing, because let's keep it in perspective. He's the president. He's not the dictator, right? He still has to, and we could talk about that later. He still has to work with parliament there. But just in terms of putting these ideas in the public eye, I think in his case, it's been a combination of showmanship and ideas, because the ideas are in stark contrast to the socialist, communist, progressive environment that has put Argentina in this predicament, right? So, I was doing some more research, I saw a television, and again, it's in Spanish, and I wish I had paid attention in my high school Spanish classes, but he was talking, and the interviewer was asking him, like, what about China? And he just kept saying one sentence over and over again: the government will not engage with communist nations. And the guy says, okay, what about Russia? We will not engage, you know, we will not engage with Cuba. We will not engage with North Korea. We will not engage with China, blah, 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 blah. But private companies are free to do so. And I said to myself, what a wonderful libertarian position, right? The government is not going to deal with these authoritarians at all. But private companies are free to do so if they want, right? And you don't see that in very many places. Talk to me a little bit, if you can. Do you think the populace in Argentina is truly appreciative of a libertarian viewpoint? Or is it that it's this much like Trump, right? It's a combination of a showman with something that's not the status quo, right? Do you follow me? It's sort of like, he's different, we might as well give it a try. But we really like the fact that he's destroying piñatas on live TV and screaming at socialists. What do you feel is the mix there? How do you think the population feels about him there?
So I think to properly understand the rise of Milei, we got to focus on the Argentine situation and the drivers to his very unique style of populism. This style of populism resembles something more like Reagan than Viktor Orban in Hungary. Mm. Comparing him with Trump makes sense in terms of personality. You know, he would pack stadiums and he would say shocking things that had some truth to it, and therefore they sticked. Mm. And they shaped the national conversation. So in that regard, there are really big similarities. At the same time, the Argentine situation is pretty unique in the sense that American populism on the right is still overwhelmingly animated by cultural preservation. So when you think about a populist in America, you think about someone who wants to save the American nation from cultural degradation, from immigration.
Yeah, it's a nationalism here. Populism in the U.S. is nationalism, right.
Yeah, drastically changing the country. In Argentina, not to say that there is no cultural conservatism, because there is. It's an overwhelmingly Catholic country, and there's been debates about cultural issues that have greatly shaped politics. But the primary tug of war, so to speak, is on economics. Mm. In America, we have inflation today, and that's surely bringing out some talks about, you know, the national debt and what are we going to do, what programs we're going to cut, are we going to cut them?
Right.
But still, you see people on the right are not as profoundly serious about the economics of it all as they are in Argentina. And the reason is simple. It's because our economy right now is not the best, but it's not Argentina.
Right.
So when you grew up in Argentina and you see similar things in Venezuela, for instance, the rise of Maria Corina Machado as the Venezuelan opposition leader, who's also quite libertarian. Mm. She describes herself as a classical liberal. It's similar. The economics stick there more than anywhere else. And it's just the way it is. So that's the way to understand Argentina. I saw a lot of American populists, for instance, react to Milei's win as if it were one of them. And I initially understood why, because he did superficially align with Trump. He would post pictures of him, Trump and Bolsonaro side by side. He did, you know, he was in a Tucker Carlson interview
yeah
on X. So if you actually watch the interview, though, it's funny because you would see Millay quoting Milton Friedman and talking about, you know, libertarian ideals.
Yeah, which Trump has no idea of, right? Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
He wouldn't try to moderate himself to talk like Tucker, like most Americans would. He was talking to Tucker like what he is, a libertarian, a big libertarian. He spent most of his career describing himself as an anarcho-capitalist. Maybe he's not saying that right now out loud because the term might scare some people, but he is a libertarian and he loves libertarian thinkers.
That's a great point you make, because I also noticed that about the American right. And by American right, of course, I'm not one of those people that buckets libertarianism as a right-leaning philosophy. I think libertarianism is not part of the left-right paradigm. It's a different sort of definition, right? But it was interesting to me to see how many of these conservatives in the U.S., the MAGA types, without judging them, but it's interesting to me how many of them have claimed Milei as being an extension of this Trump universe, you know, like, so they're trying to make him like Boris. Who's the guy in Britain, the prime minister who came in on national? Boris Johnson, right. I forgot his last name. Boris Johnson, you know, I think in that situation, you could put him in Trump's orbit because they were more aligned both in populism, nationalism, and the structure of their politics. But and I think Milei did himself a bit of a disservice when he said, when he compared to himself to Trump on that Tucker interview. But I do see, for example, that if the right, like I was looking through some of his policy position, I'm looking down here to make sure I don't miss anything. But like, for example, he has no problem with immigration. He is 100% legalization of drugs. He believes in open markets, including the sale of babies, theoretically, and human organs. Like he's like, hey, if somebody wants to sell their extra kidney to make a buck, why not? Why should I stop him? Now, those type of ideas, whether you agree with them or not, I think we could both agree. Somebody on the right starts saying that here in the U.S., and they're immediately like discarded as being a lunatic, right? But somehow when Milei says that stuff in the context of a libertarian narrative, you understand that what his point is the free market will save us. And the free market and free market ideals are going to be what gets Argentina out of the predicaments in slashing spending, austerity, dollarization, which is another big part of his plank, right? He wants to get rid of the Argentine central bank. He wants to get rid of the peso. He wants to tie to the U.S. dollar. Now, I could almost hear some of our listeners, Juan, saying, but isn't a fiat currency the same as any other fiat currency? Yes, but my thinking here is, and I'm sure it's Milei's, right? He's like, okay, we as libertarians, we would prefer being a Bitcoin economy or a gold-based economy. But at least the U.S. dollar is an international currency, and our government won't be able to just print up dollars, right? The way they can just print up pesos, which is what's contributing to that 143% inflation, right?
Yeah. And the dollarization argument in Argentina was one that was quite controversial years ago. Other South American nations before Argentina did it before them. Argentina hasn't done anything yet. You know, Malaysia.
Right, like, wasn't Panama and Panama? I know dollarized, correct?
Ecuador.
Ecuador. Yeah. So there was two or three nations in South America that did dollarize, right?
And here is it makes sense to for Argentines to, you know, consider dollarization, although the cultural element there of we're going to surrender our currency and use the American currency was one that the, you know, the socialists really fixated on, and somehow Milei made it through openly talking about dollarization, which whatever we think about it, as an American.
right.
The reality is that it's good for the U.S. And that's another thing that I think that that's where, you know, the more nationalist types on the right and libertarians writ large can actually see in Malay a good person to have in power, much better than the socialist. And that's where, you know, that fusionism that many of us have critiqued in the last decades, at least when it comes to Argentina and foreign affairs, we can say, hey, we prefer Malay than a socialist. The nationalist argument would be simple. It would be having the second most powerful economy in South America aligned so strongly with the U.S., use our currency, not join BRICS, rebuke China and other of what, you know, the American right broadly today would say are enemies. That's good for the U.S. And then for libertarians, it's of course like good because it's a libertarian in another country. And how will that influence how this world view, how this philosophy is interpreted? Because I agree with you. Libertarianism, as we were talking at the beginning, in the U.S., it's often seen as, oh, that's for teenagers. Oh, you'll grow up out of it.
Right.
But it's a serious philosophy with serious thinkers.
Yes.
And it must be considered. Of course, situations vary. And sometimes for the population, socialism will sound more appealing. Libertarianism will sound more appealing. Conservatism, depending on the circumstances we find ourselves in. Hopefully we won't find ourselves in an Argentina situation or Venezuela situation to say, hey, maybe we should apply some of these ideas.
And you know what's interesting? In hearing you talk, I picked up something that I hadn't considered before, but given that in South America, a lot of these issues that nations face are truly economic. They're not cultural. They're not, for example, they don't have immigration problems that seem to worry people here in the U.S. They're not worried about, like you said, most of the countries are Catholic, so they don't have this clash that we have in the U.S. of multiculturalism, the religious clashes, the you know. So it's interesting to me that South America, to me, much like what Friedman did in the early 90s with the miracle of Chile, where, you know, he just went in and even though he was dealing with a strong man, he basically said, if you follow these economic policies, you guys will be wealthy beyond your imagination. And that's what happened. It seems to me that at least for short periods of time, South America is a good incubator for libertarian economic policies, where you could go in, establish a free market, reduce spending, and people, because they're not worrying about their culture wars, might be more open to these sort of libertarian thought experiments brought to life. So I don't know if you feel that's the case. Like, and just being someone like from the area culturally, do you think that people in South America, I mean, we're talking about Argentina, but I guess we could generalize to the nations down there, as you mentioned, Venezuela, Brazil. Like, are they more open to what are considered radical economic solutions in the U.S.? Would they be more open to that since maybe they understand how the economics of their situation is what drives their misery in a lot of cases?
Yes, definitely. So I actually discussed this in my article too. So it's an awesome question. Because I actually know the answer to.
Oh, okay. Let's hear it.
Yeah. Latin America is one of the most volatile regions in the world. Of course, we know this because we watch TV and we watch what's happening in the world. And more interestingly, though, it's one of those regions in which inequality is stark, income inequality is stark. Right. But also socialism is prominent. Mm. And those socialists, although they managed to reduce inequality in the last 10 years, they haven't reduced that inequality necessarily by bringing everyone up.
Right. Yes.
They've done the opposite. So in Latin America, what we see in individual countries, different periods of times, of course, is that we see the cycle from government expansion to some government reduction happen more quickly and often in following revolt, protest, because of the individual circumstances accelerated by the ideology. So the socialists succeed when inequality of any type, really, even if it brings some people out of poverty, expands. Why? Because envy is a great currency in politics. And whatever we think about the philosophy, it has a lot of good selling points. And in the most unequal region in the world, no wonder why it's succeeding. Right. A lot of envy to be exploited there. But then when they get into power, what we usually see is that inflation becomes a reality, businesses flee, and even the people who at the when the socialists arrived told themselves, hey, I don't like this inequality. Now they start saying, hey, I don't like this poverty. So this cycle is one that Latin Americans observe much more frequently than Americans do. For instance, in Venezuela, that's another case for example.
Right.
You would see government expansion, right? And then you would see other leaders rise to prominence, calling for massive privatization programs. Let's focus on the last two decades, for instance, with Chavismo in power. Chavez arrived, basically, you know, at the beginning he would talk like a moderate Democrat. Slowly he started to talk more like a radical socialist. And he started talking about expropriating businesses, castigating the elite, which at the end just became a replacement of that elite.
Right. One elite and, for another, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And then we started to see these figures at the beginning. We saw a more moderate opposition figure who would talk like a moderate socialist. And then we saw another one. And then we saw another. We saw Capriles. We saw Juan Guaido. And when you actually see how they speak, although the socialists in the U.S., for instance, will say, oh, no, the opposition in Venezuela is radically libertarian and fascist or whatever. These were moderates. They spoke like moderates. Maybe they had some sophisticated intentions. Right. But they didn't talk like libertarians. And now the most popular opposition candidate in the last two decades in Venezuela is someone who openly talks about privatizing the oil industry.
Hmm.
So the reason why this happens is because when you have a stark socialist ideology that fears no restraint take over, the moderates will try, moderates in terms of economics, will try to battle it by saying, hey, maybe if we speak a little bit more like them, we can figure it out. But when the population dissatisfactions are engrossed by economics mainly, that's where a libertarian, or maybe someone who will not describe themselves as a libertarian, but economically speaking, talks more like one, will gain some traction. And that's what we're seeing in Latin America, which, again, it's something that I stress. I'm not telling Americans that this is something that's easy to understand based on the American prism of politics.
Right.
But when you look at Latin America, that's the reality. Like, Latin America has had much more, let's say, libertarian economic thinking put into place than the U.S. Although in the U.S., the U.S. is one of the, you know, the founding places of libertarianism, one of the places where libertarian thinkers have most impacted global conversations. But although they impact the conversation, when you look at the playground in Latin America, as we were alluding to at the beginning, it's been the place where libertarianism has been most applied.
Yeah, it has. It's been able to take root at least for until a strong man comes back, right? So, like you said, perhaps when it's inequality, when there's perhaps a sense of why am I not getting as rich as quickly as my neighbor? And that envy sets in. I think those are great points that you've brought up. All right, let me ask you now about Milei back in Argentina. He's the president-elect. He's going to get in there. He's going to have his ideas that he hasn't really backed off on too much. But the fact of the matter is there's a parliament to deal with. He doesn't have a ruling coalition. Do you feel he'll be able to actually push through a lot of his ideas, a lot of his campaign promises? Or is it going to be like a gridlock? Or do you think he has the personality to get the population behind him to demand that their legislators join Milei in his efforts? For example, you mentioned Reagan. I'm thinking back when I was your age and Reagan got elected and we were all excited, but not because he was necessarily libertarian, but because he wasn't a progressive. He wasn't a Keynesian. So at least that part excited us. But also, when people tend to forget, Reagan served his two terms without ever having a majority in Congress. He did not have a Republican majority. It was his force of personality that made opposition go along with much of his agenda, right? Dealing with Tip O'Neill, dealing with Democrats, right? Will Milei's force of personality extend to the parliament? Do you think he'll be able to get the parliament? For example, he talks about getting rid of the central bank. He talks about dollarization. He talks about breaking off all relations with Cuba, China, North Korea, Venezuela, right? Those are all great. I love to hear them. It makes my libertarian heart good to hear him say these things. How much of it do you think is going to be practically put into place? Like, let's talk about getting rid of the central bank. Is he going to be able to fulfill that promise for his voters?
This is where I'm less optimistic.
Okay.
The reality is that with former President Reagan, for instance, for all the division in Congress, there was still some unity when it came to facing a common threat, which was the Soviet Union. And anti-communism animated the Republican Party, but also to a great degree, the Democratic Party as well. Just as today in America, we see conversations about aiding Israel, for example. Mm. It's not like all Democrats don't want to aid Israel. Back then, it was the same. And maybe not in some specific policy decisions, maybe not in the monetary policy, but at least more broadly, you didn't see most Democrats in Congress say, I'm a communist. I have no problem with communists. You didn't see AOC back then speak so loudly like she does today. In Argentina, though, what I observe is that, number one, and this is somewhat unrelated, government grants employment to a lot of these people, and they've lived in government in perpetuity. Mm-hmm. The pension system in Argentina, for example, you see a lot of videos going viral in Spanish media of Argentinians saying, no, I don't work. I can live with my pension. And I've been living out of my pension for so many years. And you see the kid, the kid, it's like a 25-year-old, and you're like, wow. Argentina, it's become one of those countries in which the socialists have, you know, taken advantage of clientelism in terms of politics to have a vast portion of society live, not only live, but depend from government.
Yes.
So although Milei managed to win with those conditions because of the distress of the population in terms, mostly because of inflation, this is also a reality. And this is why you see Milei, for example, in the debate, the last debate before he became president, Sergio Massa, the Minister of Economics of Argentina at the time, he would ask him, are you gonna make people pay for the bus tickets? Are you gonna cut this program? Are you really gonna do it? When are you gonna do it? What are the people gonna do? How are they gonna get to work? Are you really serious about this? And that's where you saw Milei have to say, well, first, we are going to make sure that we can do this, and we're going to take some time, and we're going to cut it slowly, and we're going to provide some initial, he started to present a more digestible policy,
right,
for that population who's been accustomed to having these programs,
right,
define their livelihoods in many regards. So when we think about all that, Milei, when he's going to face, you know, parliament in Argentina, which still has vast portion of socialists and more moderate conservatives, he's going to find himself having some difficulties actually applying this.
Mm.
But what I will say is, I do think that his force of personality will have tremendous influence, not necessarily with Congress. Like, I don't think it will be that he will influence Congress directly and the socialists will say, you know what, Milei, now what you're saying makes sense. I think that Milei will internationally make such an impact in the relation with other countries that then the way business is done, the way Argentinians approach international relations with large,
right,
will have a counter effect on how politicians react to circumstances. For instance, Bill Clinton, whatever we think about Bill Clinton, he actually, when he met with Milei when he came to the U.S., he met with a Biden advisor, and then for some reason, I think it was John Kirby, and for some reason, Bill Clinton was there. And it's reported that Bill Clinton told Milei that he agrees with shutting down the central bank. Some people might consider that really shocking. I know at least the more Trump folks would say, Bill Clinton is meeting with Milei. What's going on? You know, some people will think that it takes all the credibility off Milei.
Well, people forget here in the U.S., Clinton, people forget he wasn't a bad, necessarily horrible on economics. I mean, the last president to preside over a balanced budget in the U.S. was Clinton, I believe. I think that's the last time we've ever had a balanced federal budget in the U.S. So
yeah,
you're right. For whatever we think of Clinton, I don't think he was that nuts. I mean, look, for libertarians, he may still be considered nuts. But I think in the normal stream of politics in the U.S. politics, it doesn't surprise me that he might say something like that to Milei. I hadn't heard that little tidbit, but it's interesting. And I'm glad you kind of clued me into that. So do you think Milei, like, he's already said, hey, my number one allies in terms of foreign policy and business investment and things like that is going to be the U.S. and Israel. He said that flat out. And I think, interestingly, I don't know if I read it in your article or somewhere else, in a country that's 90% Catholic, he's announced that he wants to convert to Judaism, right? So, like, he's also against the grain that way, but they still voted for him. So I think that also cuts into your but supports your argument that it really is economics. It really is the economy, stupid type of thing. But do you think that as a result of Milei being elected, you'll see a significant amount of private investment in Argentina now from U.S., Israel, Western-based economies? Because I could see, to your point, which I hadn't considered before, if he opens up Argentina to more friendly business environment, you will see streams of American companies, British companies, Israeli companies make their way into Argentina. And then all of a sudden, I think that employment issue where you're saying, well, look, the Argentine government right now is the number one employer. All of a sudden, if IBM opens up a factory there, if there's a car manufacturing, like if Volvo goes in there, if some of the Israeli software development companies go to Argentina and open up a branch, all of a sudden, where are they going to bring? They're not shipping people from the U.S., from Israel, and from Britain to man those jobs, right? They may have some CEOs down there, some managers, but the overwhelming majority of people are going to be Argentinians who are going to be put to work there and have the opportunity to grow in the private sector. So in that sense, maybe through this, like if he focuses on international relations, which I'm assuming as president, he may have more direct control over, right? Like as president, he might have more influence over the way foreign policy is conducted. I could see that. Like at the end of the day, people worry about whether they can afford to eat, whether they can afford to feed their families, whether they have a nice car, a nice house, right? So there, I hadn't considered that, but you're absolutely right that if all of a sudden the business climate, and if they do dollarize, makes it even easier for like dollar-based businesses to get there. They don't have to worry about oppressive exchange rates and losing profit due to foreign exchange rates. Makes it easier to clear checks and payments and things like that. Yeah, I could see that happening.
Yeah,
like if it really happens that the economy starts to pick up in the private sector through foreign investment, I think that could be a game changer the way you've just described it. Like the guy who's now on his pension, when he figures out that he could get to, like, say, whatever, a car factory even, and make more money by working, it's also self-fulfillment, I think, psychologically. You have something to do. You're not just sitting around, you know, doing nothing or watching football all day or whatever. So actually, that's a great point, Juan, that if he can, and maybe that's why he's so positive right now, talking up Israel and the U.S., I mean, maybe for other reasons, but also for business investment. He's clearly, what's the word, virtue signaling, like, hey, I'm business friendly. Why don't you guys come down here? Consider Argentina for a place where you guys can make some investment, capital investment, and open up a business or two down here. So I think, that's a great point.
Yeah. And I think if I can expand more on it.
Sure.
Which I think you brilliantly expanded on my point. Because I didn't know if I was exactly coherent when I expressed it the first time. A more concrete way to look at this would be a lot of the government contracts. Well, they're government contracts. I was going to say a lot of the government contracts are done by the government. A lot of the contracts in diverse industries in Argentina, for example, critical mineral resources, extraction, lithium, which is really big in Argentina, have been done directly, not between corporations, but between governments. So the Chinese have dealt directly with the Argentinian government. So if Milei says, and we still don't know how serious he is about this approach, if he actually says, and he actually puts forward a plan to reduce government contracts with, let's say, China, one of the biggest investors. And he also said something similar about Brazil, which is Argentina's biggest trading partner. Argentina and Brazil are two top trading partners, and he both called their leaders communists. So a lot of people were worrying. A lot of people in Argentina were worrying. The U.S. is the third biggest trading partner with Argentina. So naturally speaking, again, like that's the America point. If the guys that are one and two are going to have a sour relationship with Argentina, and we're number three, woohoo! Like, that's great for us.
Right.
But what I'm saying furthermore, and the point that you touched on, is that change in conditions in which the U.S. will likely invest more. There were a lot of news at the time when he won. Oh, look, the stocks are going up, and it's the first day. This will... naturally speaking, because Javier Milei is the face of Argentina, and because diplomacy is one of the main roles of presidents, of course,
right?
Like no one in the U.S. is thinking about the intricacies of Argentinian law. They're thinking about Javier Milei and what Javier Milei says. And although, of course, you know, corporations will make some risk analysis, and they won't just like take Milei at his word. His words do have an influence, and even if the policy change is not radical at the beginning, we for sure will see U.S. corporations, British corporations, companies around the West primarily want to invest more in Argentina. And again, if that comes with a reduction of government contracts with nations that are adversarial to the U.S. in the global stage, naturally speaking, you will see that affect politicians, because now you will have some politicians who maybe were not, they were socialists, but they were not having direct under the table relationship with China.
Right.
Maybe you will see them now say, look, maybe I have to move a little bit to Malay side on this issue, because he's going to fund my campaign. You know, in that regard, all politics is the same.
Right.
Whatever the politician is, they're going to care about how they actually get elected, and that's not just the votes.
Yep. How do you think? Final question. In terms of the people in Argentina, I'm talking about the everyday citizen. Do you feel that they would be accepting, say, of Western investment in Argentina? Do you feel, or would there be a backlash to that? For example, I'm saying, like, if more American business, Israeli business, Western European business found its way to Argentina, do you think the populace would view that as accepting of it, or would they be like, who are these gringos coming in here? You know, who are these Americans who think they're best at everything? You know, like, do you think there will be that sort of backlash, or will it be more just, hey, they're bringing jobs, who cares where they're from? You know, I mean, how do you think the people will react?
Yeah, it's definitely a complex picture to paint, because a lot of people in the U.S., for example, when I was in college, will look at Latin America as a broadly anti-imperialist nation, region. And the idea of the Americans coming in is something that people will naturally despise. And that's not true. Mm. That's not to say that there's not a faction of the population who fell in love with the anti-imperialist message brought by socialists in the 21st century revolution. But focusing on Argentina, of course, it's a society that's still deeply Americanized. Culturally speaking, America has much more influence than any socialist nation. Technologically speaking, although, you know, the gadgets are not necessarily made by Americans, the logos are American brands, and so on. And this might sound somewhat superficial, but the Argentinian population will oppose, maybe the British would be a different story because of the Falkland Islands, but the Argentinian population is not starkly anti-American as some would posit in American colleges. It's more in the middle. People were deeply dissatisfied at some point with the IMF and with America, when the Cold War was taken over the world and how we discussed politics domestically. But now, I wouldn't be too quick to say, hey, Argentinians are not willing to bring America in. And I could say the same about most Latin American countries today, especially the socialist ones that are not doing really well.
Right. No, well, that's a great point. That is something, to be honest with you, I didn't have an opinion because I just didn't know. But I can see what you're saying, that especially on campuses here in the U.S., like how a progressive professor might be quick to always paint us as imperialists and that every other nation in this world hates Americans. But it may be, to your point, even if it's just a neutral position on Americans by the common Argentinian, even if it's merely neutral, they don't have to be pro-U.S. as long as they're not anti-U.S., then if their economic situation changes and somehow the U.S. is associated with that, then I think you're right. As long as they're neutral, they'll be able to accept it. Yeah. All right. Juan, Pablo, Yasmil, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a great little insight into what's happening in Argentina. Before we go, one quick answer. Do you think Milei will be successful or not?
I would think successful, yes. Moderately successful, maybe. That was not one word, but it's hard, man. Okay. I'm such a politician.
Yeah, yeah. It's okay. But you have positive outlook for him.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
Yes. That's my one word answer.
Okay, great. All right. Juan, thank you for joining us. Please let the people know, where can they follow you? Give us your Twitter handle, website, anywhere where you want people to find out some more of your good work.
So I'm Real JP Villasmil, VILLASMIL on Twitter. And then on Instagram, it's just JP Villasmil. Again, two L's, SMIL.
Okay.
And you can just Google my name if you want to read anything.
Okay. Good. We'll have that information up on the screen so that people can follow you. Follow Juan. He's a cool dude. Hopefully we've made a new friend and we'll have him back on the show to discuss some other issues. Juan, thank you so much for joining us. Everyone else, you've been listening to Free For All here on Grumblings Media. Please don't forget to like us, give us a good review. Check out our other shows too, The Big Questions with Big John, where I interview some prominent libertarians. As a matter of fact, I just completed another round of interviewing the LP candidates for president. I hope you find that interesting. For our conservative friends out there, you could check out Fired Up with my partner, William Del Pilar, who's from Panama. He's a South American himself there. So maybe we can also get Juan to talk some sense into him, take him away from conservatives and bring him over to the libertarian side. Also check out our new podcast, Red, White, and Rude, which is an entertainment podcast. And also Points on the Board, our sports-related podcast. So everyone, just go to grumblingsmedia.com. Until next time, this has been Big John. Peace, everyone.